Services on today, April 18th, 2011. And I'll open up the work session on House Bill 2235. Jennifer, could you talk briefly about the bill and then about the amendment? Here he comes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2235 in its original form required the Oregon Health Authority to provide training and informational materials concerning maternal mental health to health care providers serving pregnant, postpartum, and post-pregnancy loss patients. It requires hospitals and health care providers serving reference patients to provide materials published or approved by the Oregon Health Authority. It allows Oregon Health Authority to apply for federal grants to provide training and materials. The amendments that are for consideration for the committee are the Dash 3 amendments and the new Dash 4 amendments. The Dash 3 amendments modified Section 1 of the measure requiring OHA to develop informational materials for health care providers serving pregnant, postpartum, and patients who have experienced post-pregnancy loss. The material must be based on recommendations made in the report of the Maternal Mental Health Disorders Workgroup and posted to the agency's website. The Dash 4 amendments replace Section 4 of the measure dealing with the contingency of funding and operative date of the enactment. So that's where we are. We are waiting for the fiscal analysis on the Dash 4. What LC is going to be doing in order to help the process for the agencies and for fiscal in their analysis is looking at combining the Dash 3s and 4s into a new amendment. That'll save time and effort for the agencies and LFO. So
we don't need to accept any amendment this morning.
Correct. They LFO would prefer that they be put together into one new amendment, and I've had conversation with legislative council with regard to doing that, and they thought that they would be able to complete that sometime today.
Okay, great. So if there's no discussion, I think I will close the work session on House Bill 2235, and we will await the combination of those two amendments.
Correct.
And hopefully pass it on Wednesday.
I think we need to make sure you say carry over. Carrying it over to the next board.
Yes, thank you. We'll carry this over until the next meeting on April 20th. Thank you, Representative. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2235.
I don't know where we are. We're just going to stand at ease for just a second, please.
House Committee on Human Services back to order. And I'd like to announce that we will not be hearing House Bill 2438. We will not be hearing House Bill 2464. And I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2375.
Want me to do a little quickie on
this? Yeah, would you just give us a quick background, Jennifer?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2375 removes prohibition against healthcare representatives admitting principal for treatment of mental illness. This was heard for the first time last Wednesday. We have received the revenue and expenditure analysis, and there is no revenue impact or no expenditure impact on this measure.
Thank you, Jennifer. If there's no discussion before we move on, I would entertain a motion on this bill.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2375, is that right?
Yes.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Tomei has moved House Bill 2375 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll ask Matt to call the roll.
Representative Greenlick.
Aye.
Representative Barker.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Weiser.
Aye.
Vice Chair Brevis.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye. House Bill 2375 is declared passed and will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and hopefully with the good help of Dr. Greenlick as carrier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 2375. And colleagues, we're going to open a brief work session on two bills. First will be House Bill 3102, followed by House Bill 2049. For the purposes of our colleague, who I know I saw, who doesn't speak to me personally but speaks to good friends of mine and won't be in the room, and therefore I take it all back. So I would like to carry over House Bill 3102 and carry over House Bill 2049 to our next meeting. And moving right along, I would like to open, and I'm wondering if I do I need my colleague Representative Cowan, or are we fine to go ahead?
Yes.
With OPI 3037? She's probably tired of us.
I think she is. I don't think
we can do another one. We can call her off.
I think she knows. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3037. And Jennifer, tell us just quickly about the bill and specifically all the activity on amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3037, in its original form, provides for the expansion of services through the Oregon Project Independence, including in-home and community-based home care supportive services, health promotion services, information on immediate and long-range options, counseling, and transportation service options. You have before you three amendments. All three amendments would need to be adopted conjunctively. The Dash 1 amendments restored the original language in the measure regarding the definition of authorized agency. The Dash 2 amendments restored the original language in the measure regarding eligibility determination being required prior to any client receiving services from an authorized agency or service provider. And the new Dash 3 amendments deletes the permissive language for expending of funds appropriated for Oregon Project Independence. It removes the language that allows for funds to be expended for home care supportive services, including in-home or community-based services that assist an individual in achieving degree of independent functioning in the individual's home. All three of these amendments, we've received the revenue and fiscal impact statements. There is no revenue impact or no fiscal impact on any of the amendments.
Thank you, Jennifer. I would entertain a motion on the amendments to this bill.
Mr. Chair, I move, we should do each one separately. I move the dash one amendment to House Bill 3037.
Thank you. Chair Tomei has moved dash one amendments to House Bill 3037. Is there any objection to those amendments, the First Amendment? Seeing none, do I have to call a roll or can I declare that?
No, you can.
I declare them adopted. I would entertain a motion to the Second Amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move dash two amendment to House Bill 3037.
Thank you. Chair Tomei has moved the dash two amendments to House Bill 3037. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the dash two amendments are adopted as well as the dash ones. And now?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendment to House Bill 3037.
Chair Tomei moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 3037. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the dash three amendments are adopted to House Bill 3037.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3037 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Tomei moves House Bill 3037 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, I will say I want to thank not only Representative Cowan and others, but everybody on the committee for being patient. I think that we truly have a bill that is has input from all corners. I think we can be proud of this OPI bill, and I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Wiley.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Greenland.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye. House Bill 3037 is amended, is declared passed, and moving to the House floor. And if colleagues don't have any objection, we'll ask Representative Cowan to be the carrier.
Great.
I want to close the work session on House Bill 3037. Let's move right along to House Bill 3260. I'm going to open a work session on that bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3260 in its original form required the State Commission on Children and Families to contract with a nonprofit entity to establish, coordinate, and deliver support services for runaway and homeless youth and their families. It permits the nonprofit entity to seek local, state, federal, public, and private funding to carry out the provisions of runaway and homeless youth support services. We do have a dash three amendment, which in essence streamlined the dash ones. The dash three amendments repeal section one of the measure. It replaces the State Commission on Children and Families to the Department of Human Services as the responsible party for coordinating the statewide planning for delivery of services to runaway and homeless youth and their families. It requires DHS to recommend policies that integrate a system of services and support for runaway and homeless youth into the state's continuum of care for children who are 0 through 21 years of age. It requires the State Commission to transfer all duties, functions, and powers to the Department of Human Services, and it transfers all records and property from the State Commission to the Department of Human Services. It requires unexpended balances to be transferred to DHS from the State Commission beginning July 1, 2011, and it added an emergency clause to the measure.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Uh-huh.
I would entertain a motion on House Bill 3260.
Have we already accepted the amendment?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move
The dash three. Yes, it's the dash three.
Okay, I move the dash three amendment to House Bill 3260.
Chair Tomei has moved the dash three amendments to House Bill 3260. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the dash three amendments to House Bill 3260 are accepted.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Ready? I move House Bill 3260 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Tomei has moved House Bill 3260 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means?
Is that the way it goes? Okay, that's exactly right.
Togetherness. Is there any discussion at this point? Seeing none, Matt, can you call the roll?
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Harper.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Whiteley.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Gilead.
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. I would like to open, and I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 3260, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3570. Give us a little background and an update on those amendments, if you would, Jennifer.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3570 in its original form renames the State Commission on Children and Families to the State Children and Families Commission, reduces the number of members to the State Commission appointed by the governor to 9, requires both the state and local commissions on children and families to facilitate collaboration between agencies and partners and advocate for improved outcomes and remove barriers. It redefines the main purpose of the local commissions to include preventing child abuse and neglect through community stabilization and strengthening families, reducing risk factors for failure in school, and responding to locally identified needs of children and families. We do have a -5 amendment, which in essence replaced the whole measure. They were quite extensive. We carried this over from last meeting in order for opportunity to review those amendments. We have a fiscal and revenue impact statement. There's no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact to the -5 amendments. And we have added a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on this measure.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Mm-hmm. May I ask you a question, please?
Please, Representative Greenlee.
Why is it going to Ways and Means if it has a minimum fiscal? They have some fiscal.
It has some fiscal, right.
R1.
I think just enough just for their standards.
Yeah, their standard now is that if it's even $1 of general fund or $1,000 other funds, so.
Okay, thank you.
Give them to 50 cents.
That's right. Rounding down.
Mr. Chair, I move the -5 amendments to House Bill 3570.
Chair Tomei has moved the -5 amendments to House Bill 3570. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move to move House Bill 3570 as amended without recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Tomei has moved the House Bill 3570 with the -5 amendments without recommendation. Did you say without recommendation?
I did. Okay.
And that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? The without recommendation is fine with the chair. But I'm quite excited about the contents of this bill, and I'll be discussing same with our colleagues on that subcommittee. Because of what I've already stated, and many of you have already stated, our commitment to what's happening in our counties, I can speak strongest about my county, Marion County, in terms of what we're doing on the ground with our commissions on children and family services. So,
Mr. Chair. This was just for the -5 amendments, not the whole bill, right?
No, we just adopted them.
We've adopted the amendments, and now we're in discussion on the bill.
Because, I mean, if there's no objection, I think we should be a little more encouraged to Ways and Means to move this, even though I know we have probably a supporter from Ways and Means here, but I'm just kind of wondering why we're not giving any recommendation to it.
Sure, I'd say the same thing. If if we think it should be recommended to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative. Are you open to?
Sure.
We're going to, I guess we have to withdraw.
I withdraw my previous motion.
Thank you. Chair Tomei withdraws the motion, and I would entertain a new motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3070 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Chair Tomei moves House Bill 3570 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion at this point? Thank you for that correction, Representative Widener and Representative Greenlee. And I will ask Matt to call the roll.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Parker.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Gilliam.
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill is sent with recommendation to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'm going to close the public hearing, excuse me, the work session on House Bill 3570. And there's no other information?
No.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Which was 3444? I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3444.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3444 requires the court to award custody to the parent that a minor child 14 years of age or older indicates a preference to reside with a majority of the time, unless the court finds that it is not in the best interests and welfare of the child to do so. Requires the court to consider the desires and educational needs of a minor child between the ages of 11 and 14 in making custody determinations, provides that the preference or desire of the child does not constitute a change of circumstances unless the child's preferences or desires would cause a change in the existing custody judgment or order.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. I'd like to call Teresa O'Halloran and Mina to come up. And also, Carol, I believe it's...
Lighter.
I think it's Lighter.
Well, I don't think so.
If you'd identify yourself and begin, we'd appreciate it.
Co-chairs Gilliam and Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Teresa O'Halloran. I appreciate your listening to our testimony today. I'm a resident of Portland, a constituent of Representative Greenlee. I've served as president of the Oregon chapter of the Children's Rights Council for 5 years. My family also spent 10 years in the family court system, and for that reason I feel compelled to speak out for the rights of children and having an actual voice at a certain age. This bill, as it's presented, does not give a child an automatic. There still is judicial discretion that would be involved, and hopefully parents would be able to agree prior to getting to that point to allow children some input. Nowhere in our current Oregon statute does it clearly state that a child's wishes are used in determination of custody or parenting time, and nor does our statute allow for the changing age or evolving developmental needs of a child post-judgment. Children of divorce in Oregon, especially teens, have a very difficult time of having their voices heard. Many times parents will divorce when a child is very young, and never will there be changes to the parenting plan. If there is emotional abuse or physical abuse in a household, it can go unheard for years without an avenue for the minor child. The current methods of which a child can be heard in Oregon are the following. The first, through a custody evaluation. This often is done during the initial motion for divorce, but years can go by and never updated. Many people in this state think that a child at the age of 12 or 13 or 14 would actually have a say. A child does not have a voice until they're 18 in this state. Appointment of an attorney for a child can also take place. However, this is not automatic. And even when a teen requests an attorney under ORS 107.425, a parent's attorney can object. In many cases throughout the state, the judge will use judicial discretion and may ignore the child's wishes over the objections of the custodial parent or the attorney. Number three, the appointment of a therapist. A custodial parent can object for years to therapy or counseling for a child, even though the child has requested to talk to someone or shows signs of distress. If the non-custodial parent takes the child to an appointment, that parent can be held in contempt. This happens frequently where a parent is actually brought up on contempt charges for bringing their child to a therapist. In ORS 109.675, a child of 14 years of age can be seen without parental consent with a therapist. However, if a custody order is in place, that law is trumped by the custody order. They can also go through DHS. A teen can contact DHS or the police if emotional or physical abuse is present. However, due to the DHS workload and the perception that a teen is less vulnerable, further investigation does not always take place. Following the death of Jeanette Maples, a Eugene teen, DHS conducted a statewide investigation and recognized in a report dated April 5, 2010, that there was a systematic problem with teens' cases in our state. It stated that age is systematically influencing both screening and assessment decisions in cases. Number five, the teen can be emancipated at age 16. This is an option, but it's not really. It's really exercised, and it's not always in the best interest of the child. Only 1 to 2 cases are heard or granted every year by juvenile court, and the risks outweigh the benefit of emancipation. Or, in many cases, runaway. In many cases, a child may eventually run away because they feel powerless. Many times, this leads to trouble. Some attorneys in our state have actually advised non-custodial parents that it is less expensive and the results are quicker by just telling your child to run away, which automatically creates a change in circumstance, which is required by our state to change custody, or they end up in juvenile court. This is not the solution. The Oregon Runaway and Homeless Group in 2005 estimated approximately 12,000 to 17,000 youths between the ages of 13 and 17 run away from home in Oregon. This is disgraceful. Approximately 30% of runaways stated that family dynamics were the reason that they ran away and the introduction of a step-parent or potentially a new significant other in the other parent's life. 71% of those runaways were girls, 50% were on the street for 1 week or less, and Portland, Oregon was ranked second in the country for teen sex trafficking between the ages of 12 and 14. Committee members, we need a mechanism that empowers the teens of divorced families to make healthy choices. To quote one local developmental expert, teens organize their lives to develop autonomy. Autonomy means self-government, not separation or rebellion. A teen's autonomy is crippled and self-esteem suffers when healthy choices are arbitrarily dismissed. In a massive study of teens 15 to 17 by the National Institute of Mental Health, 85% of those teens stated the most important relationships in their lives centered on family. I strongly urge you to allow children a voice with House Bill 3444.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll have questions at the end of the panel. Whoever would like to go next.
My name is Nina Schnitzer. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Dear committee members, please accept this testimony in support of HB 3444. A child, by definition, is any person under 18 years of age. We all know that within this broad age range, there are diverse developmental differences between a young child and an adolescent or a teenager, for that matter. We set various benchmarks for our children and give them more and more responsibility and decision-making ability in many areas of their lives as they grow older and finally reach adulthood by age 18. Children can choose to see a therapist, receive medical care, get birth control, and get an abortion without parental consent before the age of 18. In other words, our society has decided that it's developmentally appropriate for children to have certain decision-making authority while still technically a minor. In fact, some of these decisions they can make have life and death consequences. Most people assume that children in divorced families have some input as they grow older on where they live or how often they transition between homes. But just because most people think this is so does not make it so. The law in the state of Oregon does not make a provision for children to make a decision on where they live at any age. They have no voice when they are an adolescent or a teenager younger than 18, for that matter. Furthermore, there is no properly functioning vehicle in place that assists a child in getting their voice heard. It is not feasible for a child, no matter what age, to independently hire their own attorney, and a judge cannot appoint an attorney for a child unless a motion is pending before the court. To make matters worse, there are very few laws that govern how an attorney must represent a child's voice. It is basically up to the discretion of an attorney to say what he or she thinks is in the best interest of the child, not what the child wants. There are very few avenues, if any, at all, that are open to a minor who wants their voice heard and wants to have a say in where he or she lives. Most states have legislation that supports giving children a voice in where they live, especially as they grow older and more developmentally capable of making these types of decisions. Georgia, for example, passed legislation that clearly states a child's desires shall be taken into consideration at age 11, though their desire is not controlling, and at age 14, a child's desire on which parent they want to live with is controlling. In other words, a child of 14 can decide whom he or she wants to live with. Only 9 states do not give children a voice in these matters, and Oregon is one of those states. I firmly believe that children are capable of making good decisions as they mature. Society believes children are fully capable of making good decisions as they mature. This belief is widely supported by the fact that children do have certain decision-making power available to them in the ways I mentioned above. Children should and must have the ability to have a voice in determining what is right for them when it is developmentally appropriate to do so. Some detractors of this belief may say that children cannot make these kinds of decisions because it will place them in a position where they have to choose one parent over the other. I say this is not about choosing one parent over the other. Rather, it is about the older child making a decision in their best interest. Some detractors may say that the child is not capable of making this decision and it might harm the relationship with one parent or the other. Research supports that children want to have both parents in their lives. Research supports that children often complain they do not spend enough time with the non-custodial parent. Who knows better than the older child when he or she is not spending enough time with one parent or the other? The very important distinction between the young child, the adolescent, and the teenager comes into place here. The important question becomes, at what age should children be given a voice in where they live or how often they transition from one home to the next? As HB 3444 states, children should have a voice at age 11 and at age 14 should be able to determine where they live. Children are smart and can make good decisions as they mature. There is tremendous conflict between parents on how much time each should get with their children. This wastes court time and valuable resources. The conflict often stems from who will receive and who will have to pay child support. This should not be about money. Rather, what is in the best interest of the child? Let's take the fight away from the parents and out of the court and give the older child the ability to make the decision. Research supports that the more say children have in determining where they live, the more likely they are to be happy and well-adjusted. I strongly urge you to vote yes on HB 3444. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Co-chairs Gilliam and Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Carol Leiter. I'm a resident of Oregon. Both of my children at age 10 began to be verbal about wanting to live with me full-time. And I was not encouraged about the prospects of a change in custody for the reasons that Teresa and Mina have cited. My son has Asperger's. His dad would not allow treatment or medicine. In their early teens, both my children began to run away. My son threatened suicide. And after a couple of years of this hellish existence for them and being motivated to run away and my son threatening suicide and the police got involved, I think that situation was so uncomfortable for their dad that he didn't want to deal with it, and he finally let them live with me. And at that point, they began to settle down. I got them counseling, and I'm happy to report now that my daughter will be 18 in June and my son's 19. They've settled down considerably and are doing okay, but at a very high price to their development. Thank you.
Thank you for coming today. Questions for this panel? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like this bill that you have here for us, Teresa. I'm just trying to think of all the different cases and scenarios that can play out. And the one that comes to mind that I can kind of see an issue, and maybe one of you can enlighten me too, is I have four boys. And let's just say my oldest is 14 and the rest are 8 years on down, and the 14-year-old decides he wants to live with me because I let him come and go as he wants, and mom won't let him do that. I don't care if he goes to school, so he gets all of his freedom with me, but he has more structure with mom. I know it's tough for a judge to see that, but I also know how my teenage boys work. How would that play out in this scenario with this bill? Because I can see the court kind of taking it into consideration, but I can see the desires of a child coming into play too. So if you could enlighten me on that, I would appreciate it.
Currently, the way the law works is that one parent would have to file for a change of circumstance or a change of parenting time or change of custody. So this bill doesn't take that ability away for that parent that feels that it would be a negative consequence for that teenager. I have teens, and actually my boys recently made the decision to live with both, they live with both of us. And so they come and go as they please, but both of us have very strict households. But there's going to be cases, and we all know that that's the case where the teen would say, I want to go live with them because there's no boundaries and there's no rules and I want to be over at that house. In that case, then that other parent could certainly object to that being the case. So it doesn't, even though, and again, this bill was written by an attorney. It wasn't obviously written by me. I think that with an amendment or two, I do think that it could be a very effective bill. When I saw the way it came out, I felt like there could absolutely be issues that would come up, like what you just raised, that would need a tweaking here or two, but there definitely needs to have, there needs to be an avenue, because the current avenue for teens is not a good avenue. When you have attorneys saying to a parent, well, there's nothing I can do. You've got teenagers saying to that parent, I want to go back to court, but there's no change of circumstance that you can bring except for the child feels that they would be better there, or that the other parent is not as involved as the other parent might be. There needs to be an avenue for that, and right now there is none. And it's pretty much you wait till you're 18. And if your parents divorced at age two, so be it. So there needs to be an amendment to this bill, but I do think there needs to be something that comes through here for kids.
I'd like to add something. I see this less about the teen making a bad choice. I see this more about a teen having the opportunity to be with both of their parents. One of the things that we hear over and over that the research shows is that children don't get to see each parent often enough. And as a teenager, this allows them the ability to do so. So I see that as having the teen having the opportunity to have a healthy relationship with both of the parents.
I'd like to add that just having a voice with the court would have been a powerful experience for both of my children. Even if the court had decided to stick with the custody arrangement, my children would have known that their opinion was valued and listened to. And I hope you never have this experience, but when your children become teenagers, it doesn't matter how many boundaries their parents set or the law sets. If they want to, they are going to break all of those boundaries. And if you're really unfortunate, they will run away and you won't know where they're living. And it would be better to have them living with a boundaryless parent than out on their own.
Representative Greenlink, and then we'll go to Representative Parrish.
Thank you very much. I have great sympathy for the concept here, and we talk about making sure that their voice is heard and they have a say in where they're going. I think that's really important. Did you the way this bill is written, it would really be essentially take away the discretion of the judge. The judge would have to produce a finding, which is a complicated legal thing, that it wasn't in the teen's best interest. We all know that the prefrontal lobe of teenage, particularly teenage boys, isn't quite ready for thinking about future consequences. It would seem to me it would do a lot to just do the clause that you have for kids 11 to 13 to assert that their voice is heard and to give them a place that it needs to be taken into consideration. Would that sort of thing, would that get you sort of toward where you want to go in this bill?
I do think that any avenue to allow a child a voice would be better than what's currently out there. I can tell you in my own experience with my sons, based on what was going on, they actually wrote a letter to the judge, and opposing counsel literally was able to squash their ability to be heard based on the fact that there wasn't a pending motion for parenting or custody time. So if I had actually made a motion to change custody, then my sons would have gotten heard. But I didn't want to I didn't want to start that whole custody evaluation when kids are 15 and 17. You know, I mean, here we go again with multiple thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars that wouldn't be, required. I'm happy to say that we were able to come to an agreement, but it was through a lot of pain and heartache for the boys. So if they did have some avenue, and maybe, maybe the way this bill is written isn't that avenue, but I guess the point is that we felt that it was important for it to be addressed and for lawmakers to understand that there's a serious problem with our not being able to get kids heard in our state. And that is why, there's a high percentage of teenage runaways. That's why we even have, I looked up at some of the abortion statistics, very, very high. And if
sub 2 in the bill gives a voice to kids 11 years old and older, it seemed to me that sort of thing, to at least start with, would give them a voice in this, and the voice would have to be taken into consideration. So maybe that would be a good start.
Yes, I agree.
I think that would be a good start, mm-hmm. to have some kind of a voice provided for the children. And my experience was the same as Teresa's. My children wanted to have a voice, but were not able to do so because there had to be a motion pending. So there really isn't a good vehicle to allow children to have a voice.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you, Representative. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. I guess I just think that bills like this come forward because somewhere along the lines our court systems don't serve the people who they were designed to serve. And God bless the judge in Washington County who had my sister emancipated before she was 16 at my behest because it saved her life. So, and he totally bent the rules to get that done. So I appreciate you bringing this forward. And I'd love to see this come back into another session. I think we're past the deadline to get it worked. Because at this point, you're right, with all the examples you gave of where we're letting kids make decisions for themselves and they can't pick a parent, it seems a little odd to me that we give kids so much rights and values in other sectors of the law. But, you know, where they want to be to keep them comfortable and keep them safe is unconscionable to me that we don't give kids more voice. So thank you for bringing it along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this could be amended into a good bill.
Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you said that the current balance in terms of how different states handle this issue is 41 and 9. If we were to go over, it would be a flux over to 42 and 8. Are there any states that have, based on their experience being in that majority number, granting rights to children under the age of 18, considering going the other way? Mm-hmm. Are there any states that currently or that currently grant rights to children under the age of 18 that have had negative experiences, consequences from that policy, that are going back the other way? I know nothing about this area at all, so.
I haven't heard any states that have rescinded a law. I do know that Maryland has a law that allows a 16-year-old to actually bring a motion of their own to the court. Obviously, you know, that's more court time and whatnot, but it does allow, without emancipation, it allows the 16-year-old to bring that motion. But I don't know of any states that have, of the 42 that have reversed their decision to allow children a voice. And most states that do have a voice, the majority that I had looked up, the age is 12. So that 12 seems to be the magic number for many states. We actually had pulled the Georgia bill because it addressed the 11-year-olds. And when I had talked with some developmental specialists in Oregon, they had actually said there's some 11-year-olds. So that's why we thought the Georgia bill looked, somewhat realistic.
Thank you for that question, Representative. I'm wondering about other states. Yours was a little deeper than my question. And also, it's a tall order that deserves a little more examination, so I appreciate that. Did you already? Oh, no. Representative Widener.
I like to go multiple times, Chair. Actually, this is more for directed to the chairs. I think one of the things that we miss lots of times and that I've seen in our whole system is the failure to put forward the kids' rights. And sometimes they get trampled on because adults will make poor decisions. A child will end up in foster care, be in a home where they want to adopt them and the child feels loved, but because we look out for the rights of the adults or the parent that had messed up, we're going to force the child to go back with that parent when the child doesn't want to. And I think this is something that give an opportunity for children, for a judge just to see, and I think we could do some work on this bill if you're willing to let us, just where a judge can say, hey, this child wants to be with both parents. Now I know this is how I structure it. The child seems terrified of this parent for some reason. What's the reason for that? Is there some abuse that's going on, something like that? You know, I'm going to award probably 80% of the custody time here, 20%. But I think it would be good for a judge when he's doing these battles to be able to hear from the children and not let attorneys get in the way of the judge not hearing that when he's making these decisions. So,
if you're kind of wise of that, you and I can work on a version of this for the February session. I'd be really happy to work with that.
Did you just call me Representative Weiser?
Widener. Isn't that your name?
Yeah.
Weiser.
I was happy with Weiser,
wise
too. So.
Representative Wise Guy, is that what? No, that's
which
that's a chair.
Yeah. No.
So,
completely out of order.
If the chairs are willing, it sounds like Representative Greenluck and I are willing to put something together to make this work.
Well, thank you for that, and I'm encouraged by that. I'm grateful to my co-chair that we could at least have this preliminary hearing, and as you probably know, it we move in inches sometime in this building, but it's a very important one that we've done this morning. Nobody wants to negate a judge's ability, but everyone, I think, can agree that a child's voice in divorce is extremely important. And I'm struck by the fact that Oregon is one of the few that isn't allowing that. And I appreciate the testimony and your personal experiences very much. There's obviously cricket loose in the room.
I apologize.
Okay. And there's obviously interest in this in the interim. We've got lots to talk about what we'll be working on after this session. As you probably know, this week is the end of first chamber bills, as they say, the House bills. But it's not the end of our interest and discussion in this, and I want to thank all three of you for coming forward. If there's no other questions or comments to our panel.
Yes,
Chair.
It seems like we have two people who are willing to work on this in the interim. Are you willing to put together a work group that would get all of the stakeholders together to look at this? I think, can't we appoint them to do that?
I think we can.
Committee? Let's do that.
And we will do that. We were allowed to do that offline, and that's what.
Yes.
Thank you for that comment, and we will be in touch. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad you came. I am going to close that public hearing on House Bill 3444, and thanks everyone for their input on that. And with that, I am going to adjourn the House Committee on Human Services.